This episode is brought to you by Impossible Foods. When the world is telling you to eat less meat because it's bad for the environment and bad for your health, Impossible Foods wants you to eat more meat. Yes, that company that makes meat from plants, Impossible Foods. By creating delicious, nutrient-packed meat from plants that's better for the planet. Impossible lets you enjoy some of your favorite meaty products with a plant-based twist. Ground beef, home-style meatballs, sausage patties, and so much more. All made from plants. Check out ImpossibleFoods.com to see how you can help solve the meat problem with more meat. That's ImpossibleFoods.com.
Betches Media presents.
I really want to lose 3 pounds.
Yeah, no, don't put me down for cardio.
Diet starts tomorrow.
Exercise gives you endorphins. Endorphins make you happy.
I want to quit the gym.
Happy people just don't shoot their husbands.
With hosts Aileen Cooperman.
Joey doesn't share food.
And Sammy Fishbein.
Whatever, I'm getting cheese fries.
Hello, welcome to Diet Starts Tomorrow. I'm Aileen.
I'm Sammy.
And today we are joined by Helen Phelan. You might know her from her mindful fitness app, Helen Phelan Studio, or for her approach to anti-diet culture with intuitive fitness techniques for mental and physical strength. Welcome, Helen.
Hello. I'm super excited to be on with you guys. I've been listening to your stuff forever.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining. And you also recently wrote an article for Betches that got a lot of great attention and positive feedback from our audiences, especially on Diet Starts Tomorrow. The article was called "The Time to Cancel Shedding for the Wedding is Here." So that was great.
Yeah, this is such good timing because we did have a whole conversation about shedding for the wedding last week. And I just have to tell you, I got so many responses from DST listeners talking about their own experiences at their wedding. Some people who said that they had shed for the wedding and that they had like later in life regretted it. Some people told me that they didn't shed for the wedding and that they also potentially regretted it or had to like work through that experience. And so, I mean, your article was amazing. I went back and read it again actually last week to kind of like give myself a little bit of a boost. And it was just, it's really enlightening and like so true. So I guess you want to like kind of summarize for everyone your thoughts on shedding for the wedding.
Sure. I think it's bad. that's generalizing and simplifying things. You know, I am a human woman. I too feel the pressure to feel beautiful in a society that has all of these expectations of us. But as a wellness practitioner, as a trainer, as a coach, as a Reiki practitioner, and as someone who has battled eating disorders for, at this point, most of my life now, like 2/3 of my life, and I'm only 29, it's something that I feel like we just need to take a step back and unpack what is the desire to do that? Like, why do we feel like we have to change our appearance for this day where, you know, as I said in the article, our partners are with us for a reason. And it's probably not 100% because of, you know, the size on the scale and the dress size that we're in.
So what inspired you to want to write this?
Well, I mean, I am a bride. I got engaged in November and especially working. Thank you. Who knows when we'll get married, but I got engaged in November and even just working in fitness, even before we got engaged, you know, there's a lot of pressure in the fitness industry to look the part. And I was a professional dancer before I got into fitness. So that's kind of just been an underlying theme happening in the background of everything else happening in my life is how do I fit the part, whether it's for a character, for a costume, or for my career, for the job that I want to do. And I also have the extreme privilege of being in, you know, a straight sized body. Like I am a 4'6". And so I fully also recognize that the pressure that I might feel to look a certain way, to feel acceptable or beautiful in society is nothing compared to what people in marginalized bodies experience. And even still, friends of mine, peers of mine in the fitness industry, the second I got engaged would be like, now we're shedding for the wedding or sweating for the wedding or whatever cute little name you want to put on it. And it's hard to not take that really personally and have a moment where you're like, okay, do I throw away all this intuitive eating and intuitive fitness that I've been working on for years to recover just because of this one day? Or, you know, how could I make sure that I still have my mental health at the end of the day?
Well, what do you think it is about like weddings and women that makes like size and the fact that you are a bride so like inextricably linked? And like, it's almost like you aren't fulfilling the role of the bride fully if you don't also starve yourself prior.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's tied up in, you know, historically, before women were working and more equal in the workplace, even though, you know, we're still not being paid equally in the workplace, a wedding was kind of like the event that marked your ascension to adulthood, into womanhood. It defined your femininity in a way. And even though we like to think our culture has moved on in so many ways, that's still deep, deep conditioning that we have somewhere in the back of our heads. And so somewhere in there, it's tied to like, am I really a woman if I'm not my absolute most beautiful on this one day? It's as if being beautiful defines who you are as a person.
Right. And then there's obviously the inextricable link between beauty and thin, which is its own thing to unpack.
Yeah. I do wonder though, like where young kids are still getting like that whole idea that the wedding or getting engaged is on the pedestal. Like I still follow Something Navy, and she recently posted like a story of her daughter, Ruby, talking about how this boy in her class gave her a ring and proposed to her. And like, that was an exciting thing. And I just can't imagine though, she's getting it, you know, from, I mean, I doubt her mom is like, you have to get it. You know, I doubt that that's where she's getting it. But like, that is interesting that used to be a woman's kind of, we were saying in the last episode, like the peak of their life, their biggest accomplishment. But I wonder where their kids are still getting that concept. Cause I mean, what could they be watching? where are they being taught that?
Yeah. I think it's probably
depends
more
what kid you're talking about.
True. And their parents, who their parents are. But I think it's also way less obvious than we may realize. It's not like we're putting on TV shows and kids are like, okay, girls have to get married and that's all they can do. It's now it's so much more subtle than that.
Right.
Where do you think people are seeing it if they're not seeing it like explicitly?
Well, I think it also has a lot to do with, you know, how much of our life, especially in 2020, is on social media. And even, you know, without a wedding, we're already, not me, but people are face tuning and editing and retouching these photos to the point of, you know, alien looking cyborg, the same face type of thing. And we have lost track of what human bodies look like and feel compelled to look like that.
Sometimes I get confused when I see a cyborg, like a real cyborg, because I'm like, you must be so used to face tuning yourself that you don't even know what the anatomy of a face is supposed to be like anymore.
Yeah. I read something online yesterday and now it's going to kill me that I can't remember who said it, but I think it was Keira Knightley actually doing an interview. I don't know how I got that on Instagram on my Explore page, but some old interview from Keira Knightley and being like, I don't judge any woman who responds to the pressures of diet culture and society by doing, you know, whatever, dieting, workout, plastic surgery, injections. I judge the society that inflicts that upon her. So I think we should all do what we need to do to feel good and get through the day. And while I promote intuitive eating and intuitive fitness, I totally understand and empathetic to the fact that some people have a hard time accepting that. And even now, practicing intuitive eating and intuitive fitness for years, as you were saying in your, you know, your last podcast when you were, not your last podcast, but the podcast when you were interviewing Elish Resch, that it's lifelong. There's no perfect way of doing it. It's constantly evolving.
How long have you been an intuitive eater? Did that start as a result of being a dancer or
no?
How did that evolve for you?
As a dancer is like the opposite of an intuitive eating.
Yeah. I mean, as a result of having that past of
Totally. Sure. So I was engaging in a number of disordered eating habits for years and years and years, and it morphed into orthorexia when I got into fitness. So like, I think that was a positive step in that it was no longer anorexia or bulimia, but because I had gotten so comfortable with this restriction and, the rigidity of that lifestyle, plus growing up as a dancer, it's very entwined with, you know, I am your textbook type A person. But it got harder. Where it got dangerous is it got harder to see that it was actually still an illness because I was abusing the healthy eating habits, healthy in quotes, because, you know, eating just green juice all day is not a healthy eating habit. But society and magazines and influencers on Instagram really make us think that it is. So I did go back to therapy. And I think a big part of that was moving in with my partner when we moved in together 4 years ago. And he is French, from France. And just the dichotomy between our eating habits, like his, like, all about sensuality and pleasure and listening to his body, eating what he wants and when he wants it, which, you know, maybe men have an easier time with in general because of the less pressure on their body, but specifically just in his upbringing, it really, for the first time, made me feel like something was wrong. And so I dove into the intuitive eating book.
Right. What was an example of something that he was eating that you were like, how are you doing that versus like some habits of yours?
I don't know if that was a specific one-time thing, but, you know, like he'll, for breakfast every day, he has like, you know, a croissant or like, just whatever he wants. he doesn't eat, you know, he's into fitness. He loves working out, but he doesn't eat like health foods. If, you know, mm-hmm. the way that the foods that we think of as health foods, and his complete lack of worry surrounding that just was all the more obvious when I was having panic attacks about, you know, us eating out together at the same mm-hmm. time.
When you say he doesn't eat health foods, do you mean he doesn't eat like fruits and vegetables, or he doesn't eat like stuff that you would buy at like the natural the natural versions of chips or the natural versions of, you
when
know,
I say he eats a well-balanced diet. You know, we eat together most meals, especially in quarantine. But I mean, he doesn't, you know, spend time looking at supplements and you know, detox things and like, you know,
yeah.
So he's eating
bars
like
that are promoted, normal real foods.
He's eating like what we think of like food as food, not like, yes. not like kind of like what you see on like a wellness influencer's product recommendations.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so, he has no concern for peptides.
Yeah, he's not wrapped up in that. And, you know, I think that the wellness industry, there's so many good things that have come out of it. You know, my job has come out of it, but it's when we, our mindset around it, it's when we abuse the supplement powders and all that stuff, when we think that they're this magic elixir that's going to change and revolutionize our life, that's when it becomes too much.
You know, it's something I'm actually just realizing this as we're having this conversation, but it never processed for me until literally right now how like insecure I always felt when seeing like influencers push these like health food products. And like, I felt like I never, and I still don't like know like the brands you should get and the like ingredients you should get to like, I don't know, to get the side effects that like they tell you are like good for you. I always, that always made me feel so insecure. Like, why can't I just like be healthy with a salad and, you know, some well-balanced toppings and like, you know, make my own dressing that isn't processed. Like, why can't I be like that version of healthy? Like, why do I need to like know these like brands that, you know, you found on Well and Good or something?
I think though, even just what you said, like my own homemade dressing, like that in itself is like you feeding into what they're saying.
Well,
like,
I don't mean homemade.
You can have like a processed dressing as long as, like, there's so many dressings.
No, I don't like
processed,
but I actually don't usually like processed dressings. And the reason is because like, I like to make my own flavor of the dressing so that it's like,
okay,
but exactly what I want it to be. But like, I've never been like loyal to a dressing brand.
Well, I think the other thing that's underneath all that is that we have assigned this virtue to not just thinness, but now also health that we equate to thinness. So when we see this influencer who has like picked these tomatoes from her own garden and you know, grown whatever from scratch. And A, that's not realistic for a lot of people. A lot of people are food insecure. A lot of people don't have time to do that stuff. So it's, yeah, of course, it's wonderful to eat organic and those foods that we think of as super nourishing and nutrient dense, but it's also really, it's really a privileged standpoint to think that that's the only way to eat.
This episode is brought to you by Nuuly. Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick, but can't always find the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you, Nuuly. Nuuly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for this season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service. For just $98 a month, you get your choice of any 6 styles each month. Access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands. There are no fees, late fees, damage fees, or fees to pause or cancel. They also have inclusive sizing up to 5X as well as petite and maternity. And you always have the option to buy what you love. I love Nuuly. I've rented so many cute things from there, and I've even made a few purchases from there, and they're always spot on. They have so many brands that I honestly could never afford in real life, so it's great to be able to rent them. Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any 6 styles, but right now, you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code DST20. Just go to Nuuly, that's Nuuly.com, and enter the code DST20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's Nuuly.com, Nuuly with 2 U's, with code DST20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes.
So I want to talk about something that is like a little bit an offshoot, I guess you could say, of the whole intuitive eating movement. And that is intuitive exercise and intuitive movement. And this is something that like I've been struggling with hard lately. I have not exercised since the week before my wedding. And I realized that I have an, at this point, it's completely, if it's a Venn diagram, it's overlapping, like my association between exercise and weight loss. And it's to the extent where like, even if I like work up a sweat going on a walk, my mind is like, oh great, I burned calories. And it is like, I can't even imagine myself like moving or engaging in exercise that where that's not kind of like, at least in the back of my head, if not the major forefront of my head.
Right. Like, what are you burning off right now?
Exactly. Yeah. So I think you kind of have to reprogram your brain and the associations with exercise, because traditionally 100% of the marketing around fitness and dieting is an exchange. It's basically that they're opposites of each other, you know, like food in, food out with exercise versus food in for nourishing, exercise for vitalizing and supporting your longevity, your overall health, your mental health, your energy, all of these things. We could go on and on about all of the reasons that movement is good for you other than losing weight. But you kind of have to consciously commit those things to memory, because it won't happen automatically. What's automatic for us at this point as a culture is exercise is to either punish your body for something that you ate or work your way down the scale. Usually, you know, unless you're a bodybuilder, it's not that common to hear people talking about I'm exercising to make gains, or maybe, yeah, like the CrossFit community is more into that. But even so, they're very specific about their eating and our meal prepping and our healthy eating in a arguably disordered way.
Right. Like I used to, or I still have that mindset of like, what's the point of exercise if you're not training for something?
Yeah.
Or towards something, towards some ideal. And like most recently I went back to my trainer who I like love. I have a great relationship with him. And he was my trainer going into when I was shedding for the wedding. And most recent time I asked him, I was like, I do not want to think about my weight. I don't want to weigh myself. I just want to like kind of create healthy, like workout habits for my life. Like I don't want to have a start, stop, on, off approach to exercise. Like I want to integrate it. And that's so hard. Like yesterday, even yesterday, I went on my Peloton and I was like looking at my Apple Watch. Oh, how many calories did I burn? Let me get it to an even number. You know, even though it's completely, it doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Right. Like why do I need to burn 300 calories?
Why?
Like, where did that number come from?
Deep seated.
Like my OCD is going in like that. I have to get to the 300, even though it is an approximate number, and I know that, but it's still going through my mind. And then you feel like a failure if you don't get to some larger number that you don't even know where it comes from. Mm-hmm. So what is intuitive exercise? Can you just talk about that?
Yeah. So it's very similar to intuitive eating in that it involves interoceptive awareness or body awareness or being attuned to your body, whatever you want to call it. And it's not easy, just like intuitive eating isn't easy. It's actually probably harder than just doing the no pain, no gain. I set the schedule and I'm going to show up and do it no matter what. But over time, it becomes more habitual. It feels more natural and in practice. And I think a big part of that is changing how you feel about exercise. If you view it as a chore, if you view it as, you know, something that you have to dread doing, then we're going to have a harder time motivating ourselves to do it. Because even if we're talking about, you know, exercises to support my mental health and all those things, still some days you're tired or hungover and you don't want to do it. But if you can call on these other reasons, like I know that I'm going to feel less bloated after I do like all these rotations in my yoga practice, or I know I'm going to have more energy and be able to show up better in my relationships for the rest of the day if I got that stress out first thing in the morning with a quick, you know, cardio workout or whatever your thing is, it affects your body and your sensory awareness with the world, relationship with the world the rest of the day.
So I know like intellectually that those are, those do happen. And like, those are reasons, but like there's without the weight loss piece, just being completely honest here, it's like not worth it to me to push myself. And yeah. I know that like maybe then I should evaluate why it's worth it to me to push myself to like maybe burn a few calories versus like to push myself to have like a more pleasant day. But like, I guess it's hard for me to really believe that it will materially impact my day, impact me in any other way other than weight loss. Like, I don't really get I don't really want to move at all.
Yeah.
Other than to get thinner, to be honest.
Well, that's where I feel super lucky that I grew up dancing. So dancing has always been movement is inherently part of my identity. And I know
what if it's not?
Exactly. I know that for a lot of people, it is not.
What if the couch is part of your identity?
But I do think that it's helpful to make like a few journal entries and record how you feel before you work out, record how you feel after you work out. And that might feel really arduous and like a chore in the beginning, but you basically have to retrain a new neural pathway in your brain. So long, your entire life up till now, you've been deepening that groove of the neural pathway that says, you know, working out is for weight loss. That's what I'll get out of it. Nothing else. And so that, yeah. When you think about how strong that neural pathway is in our brain, it's not going to one podcast, one book, one session with a trainer is not going to change how you right. reflexively think about those things. So it's every day.
Well, I do think it's interesting because like, I remember like when I first started working out, it was introduced to me as like a means for weight loss. Mm-hmm. It was, but it's not like, but activity wasn't introduced to me as a means for weight loss. Like when I was younger, I would like rollerblade or like jump rope
golf.
Or play with golf, a lot of movement there.
You could walk.
Some rotation.
Yeah. But yeah, like I would say like I did sports as when I was younger and that was not like inherently tied to weight loss, but like the idea of going to the gym or going for a run or like a swim, those were all inherently like tied to weight loss. Mm-hmm. So like, what are other ways to like look at movement as like, or like look at how can I like get back into movement? At all.
Totally. Yeah. So I think if you kind of beef beef up the mindfulness aspect of it so that it becomes more meditative. And I'm biased as a Pilates instructor to thinking Pilates is like the best way to do that. But you can do that on your Peloton. You can do that in a boot camp class. You can become more aware of your breath. You can pay attention to what muscles are working when, really cue into the physical sensations, even if they're uncomfortable, because that helps, again, keeps your mind wandering. A lot of times when people are working out for like this reason of weight loss, they also hate the workout that they're doing. They're doing it because they feel compelled to show up for an event, for a wedding, for whatever it is that is making them feel like they have to look a certain way. But they check out of their body during that experience. So, you know, sometimes you need to check out of your body. Sometimes what's in your body is overwhelming. I recognize that too. But if you are able to consciously think about your inhale and your exhale, and in Pilates, we exhale on the exertion or the hard part of the movement. So think if you're doing like a curl up, sit up type of situation, you're exhaling to lift your chest up and inhaling to lower yourself down. That's also going to help regulate your nervous system a little bit more, obviously, than if you were holding your breath, which a lot of people do. You'd be shocked at how many people hold their breath for like 45 minutes. And I have no idea how they're not fainting.
I do.
Yeah, it's common.
I think for me, the way that I've kind of changed it also, Sammy, or how I'm thinking about it, is that we literally, it's again, like a motivation of health and like the real health, not weight loss. Like we need to eat something to be healthy, like, you know, so it's also the same. We have to move to be healthy. And whatever you're, because I think the part that we need to find is to replace the motivation. Mm-hmm. And that's really the piece, because the motivation is the weight loss. So what is, it's almost more empowering to even say, no, I'm not doing it to lose weight. I'm doing it to be healthy. And like making those opposites is something that's been kind of helpful for me. And even you said, you've told me like your whole life, you like to walk. And like just walking for 20 minutes, like I remember you used to text me those kinds of things. So it's helpful.
So it's interesting that you say, yes, I did used to, in theory, I guess I do like these things. I do. I guess I do. But it's like the fact that it's been so inextricably tied to like periods of losing weight where I like up the walking. And it's like I, because of the yo-yo nature of my life, it's like I associate like lack of dieting with like being completely sedentary and lazy, and like movement is something that goes along with restriction. So it's like all of these things are sort of like cemented together.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, the same way that, you know, when you say you're anti-diet, many people often reflexively think, oh, you're anti-health. If you're anti-diet or you're intuitive eating must mean like binge eating, right? But yeah, it's a spectrum. It's nuanced. There's shades of gray all within all of this. Like we said, it's constantly evolving. But it also just might mean that you need to find a way of movement, whether it's like a full-on workout class or walking in a new environment, like hiking instead of just on the treadmill, that you enjoy. Because you're not going to enjoy it every day, especially when it's hard, especially when your muscles are burning and you're sweating and you're tired, or you're, you know, just not feeling a workout that day. But if it's something that, you know, once you're doing it, you're going to enjoy it. So maybe it's dance cardio, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's CrossFit, but
I'm just imagining Sammy CrossFit.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, not my thing, but it's not my thing, certainly, but it is many people's things.
I'd be like, ugh, this sandbag is too heavy.
This sandbag is too much sand.
Can we dump some out, please?
But yeah, finding something that you enjoy, you're much more likely to stick with it.
I'll tell you what I like to do. I like to turn on music and like dance in my room in
that
front
counts.
Of the mirror and
that
no
counts.
One's there. Okay, I like that, yeah. But it has to happen by accident. I can't be like, oh, no, I'm going to do my dance. No, literally, I dance like no one's watching, and that's what makes it fun.
There is a chapter in Intuitive Eating about exercise. So, Sammy, you keep saying you're going to read the book.
But I read it, but I'm going to read it again.
I get that it's like, so it's harder. It's not the same as like approaching eating, because when we're intuitively eating, we're like, looking for satisfaction in like a pleasant way. But like you were saying, Helen, like when you work out, It's not easy.
It's always kind of unpleasant.
It's like a labor.
Yeah.
So
it's work.
It's work. So it's hard to focus on satisfaction as like your first point. But I think that that's the easiest way to start is really where can I be satisfied in moving my body? If you're saying, Sammy, like dancing, even if you're just, you know, just like swaying.
Oh, it's like more than a sway.
Well, it's also
okay. I like to like do like little ballet moves.
I love it. I love it.
I look like such an idiot. Like I'll never show anyone, but I don't care that I look like an idiot. It's not for anyone. It's for me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, it's important for our muscles to get stronger and us to build bone density and to, you know, keep our hearts strong as we age. Those are all super important reasons to move, but it's also about embodying and getting connected to your body. Like I said, a lot of people tune out, especially when we're living our whole lives on the computer and we're not, you know, walking to see someone, not going to events.
Yeah.
It's even if you're just swaying, if you can really feel into that sway, you can feel your feet grounded, pressing through the floor, your body moving to the, you know, the pace of your breath, whatever it is, that counts. That is good for your mental health, whether it is super blatantly obvious or not.
Warmer weather is finally back. After so many cold months, it's nice to get outside and soak up the sun, but the springtime always brings those unwanted guests, pollen and seasonal allergies. April showers bring spring flowers and sniffly noses and stuffed up sinuses. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. I suffer from seasonal allergies. I just had them hit the other day. I couldn't breathe through my nose at all. And I popped a Claritin and it was like night and day. I'm a huge fan of Claritin. I use it on the regular and it always helps when we're making that transition from winter to spring, which is when my allergies flare up. Mainly it's my sinuses that get so clogged and the Claritin just clears it right up. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy throat and nose, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. Ready to live your life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. This episode is brought to you by Azo. The Azo brand wants the world to stop treating women's health like a dirty word. Because the reality is, UTIs, yeast infections, and bladder control issues are common among women. But dealing with them is an uncommon act that many women are skittish about due to judgment, shame, and inaction. The Azo brand offers probiotics, prebiotics, and vaginal suppositories that help keep your vaginal health in check every day. Like Azo Complete Feminine Balance, designed with a clinically studied probiotic blend that helps restore natural balance of good bacteria. Also, Azo Boric Acid suppositories support and help with vaginal odor control. And Azo Dual Protection provides extra protection from the common cycle of urinary and vaginal issues. Everyday things like stress, your cycle, sex, and certain medications like antibiotics or the pill can disrupt your vaginal microbiome, allowing unfriendly bacteria to impact pH or extra yeast to grow. Guys, you shouldn't feel ashamed. Azo's got you covered. I'm a big fan of Azo. I actually keep it in my bathroom now because the last thing you want to do when you have a UTI is to run out to the pharmacy. So keep it stocked at home like I do and you never have to worry about it. I cannot recommend it enough. And you can save 20% now with promo code BETCHES on AZOPRODUCTS.com. Don't know which product you need? Take the quiz to learn more.
What if you like only find that intuitively you want to exercise once a month? Like that's all you intuitively want. Is that like what does that mean?
It depends on like what you're qualifying as exercise, like showing up to a Zoom class or an online video or like a class as exercise, or you know, you're not walking at all the entire month.
Like you're not walking at all the entire month. Like not walking at all, but like you're not like yeah. Like there's at no point where you're like, I'm going to do this activity of movement that I don't need to do to literally get myself from point A to point B.
Well, that's where I feel like it is similar to intuitive eating, because it's like, even if you eat, I think what was the example in your last podcast? Even if you eat grilled cheese every day for a week, you're no longer going to want that grilled cheese. Your body's going to be like, okay, I need a vegetable. I need something else. Your body is going to start to crave movement. You're going to have cramps. You're going to have low back pain. You're going to have
body sores. Yeah. It's real.
Your body is going to
real for me
react. Your body will react.
I have really just not like worked out.
I think it's also harder now because we're working from home. You're in one place all the time. Mm-hmm. And like normally, I know when we used to go to our office, like Sammy, you would walk far, like with Bruce and stuff. And like, that is movement. It's not like you're not going to work out.
I think
now it's harder to do, to like, to prioritize it because it actually really is good. Like, I feel like I keep saying like, I want to buy a treadmill. I want to buy a treadmill. I have nowhere to put it, but, I struggle walking in the city with my dog. I have like irrational fears, but my body's craving wanting to walk. I don't always crave wanting to go on the spin bike, but I'm grateful that I have that. Mm-hmm. But I think that it'll come, like it's a wave of, I need to move. I feel like a big mushroom.
Yeah, it's also not a bad thing to take breaks at all. Like, if you not feeling inclined to move, was it been like a week or two weeks since months since your wedding? Your body might just be, you know, recuperating from the mindset that
20 years of dieting.
Exactly.
I mean, I worked out for probably the past like 3 years. I didn't like skip a whole week, like the whole probably for 3 years. And that was all because of weight loss. That was none of that mm-hmm. was because because I felt like it. But something you've written about is that exercise can help like heal negative body image. How does that work?
So a lot of people like surface level take that as like, oh, your body image is healed because you're working out and you're losing weight and now you don't have a body image problem. But that's not it. Because you can lose all the weight and you can be a size that maybe you're not DNA genetically programmed to be, but still be unhappy. So the way that exercise actually can increase body satisfaction is you're basically, like I said, reprogramming, communicating to your brain each time you do something difficult that you can do tough things, that you're strong. It's empowering. And it might not feel like, you know, in that moment when you're doing that side leg lift in a Pilates class, like I'm empowered by doing this. But each time you continue pushing through it, even though it's uncomfortable, even though, you know, maybe you don't particularly love the feeling of your butt being on fire, it is sending a message to your brain that, you know, you follow through. It's basically improving your sense of self, and that turns into body satisfaction.
But question, why hasn't that happened to me all these years?
Because you were prioritizing the weight loss and your head was in that place, I would assume.
Okay.
So, fair. And there's a reason that, you know, it's marketed to us like that. It's because it works. It gets people to show up because we're so terrified of not being worthy or accepted by society, you know, and that's a simplification, but on a deep level, we are very afraid of not being loved. And so if we're told through marketing language that losing weight is going to make us lovable, we're not going to miss a workout, and it works. And that's what helps people make money. But it isn't actually the full picture. And in many cases is super unhealthy to be working out for weight loss all the time.
So then how do we reframe that? What is it that we should be working out for? Like, what would be the sentence that we could keep in our heads?
I like to say that I'm working out to take care of myself, for me time, to manage my stress, to, you know, not kill my fiance in our tiny apartment. You know, it's personal and it could change from day to day. And sometimes I put on my workout clothes, I show up to class, I do have that weight loss mindset in my mind, because it's just like negative body image thoughts are never going to go away. Negative or, you know, instinctual diet things are never going to permanently go away. It's how you respond to them. So I'll catch myself being like, I really need to work out today. We drank a lot of wine this weekend or whatever. And then I'll be like, okay, that is an old thought that's not serving me. Mm-hmm. What I do know that I'm feeling anxiety, and if I move, I'm going to not only feel my heart rate just like regulate, but I'm going to feel refreshed. And, you know, anxiety is a very physical thing. I think we can all relate to. It's a physical experience. So movement can help move that out of your body.
I also just, sorry, another thing is that I find it sometimes really hard to just like set intentions for your movement or whatever it is, because you feel very disconnected to it, especially when your motivation has always been weight loss. Like what I'm finding is that just saying like, let me just go run or let me just go move, because there's something in me that makes me, that's making me want to do it, but I don't really know why. So I'm just going to go do it. And then I feel like the intention will come, can come after. It doesn't necessarily have to be defined up front, because like it's this sort of the same thing like when in gratitude work, where you're just like, write something that you're grateful for. Like, I don't fucking know. Like at first you're like, I don't know how to, like my life, I don't know, my dog. But then once you practice it a lot, then you can be more, it becomes more obvious. It becomes more nuanced. You truly do feel grateful for those things. It doesn't become like some, it doesn't feel like BS. So yeah. Sometimes that stuff comes after. And I agree, like the weight loss is still kind of there though.
Yeah. Sometimes. And I think that, you know, you said, unless you're training for something, why would I work out? You can make little training goals for yourself. Like, I want to hold a plank for a minute. I want to get through this class without, or like, you know, this sequence, maybe without taking a break. If you set those little milestones for you, again, not only is that going to communicate to your brain, like I'm doing something, I'm excelling at this thing that I can control in a world of things that are out of my control, in a much healthier way than being like, I can control losing this much weight in a world that's out of control. Because obviously there's a bad side to that continuum as well. But if you gamify it basically for yourself, it becomes a much more enjoyable experience.
Right. Well, what are just some tips do you think that you've implemented to accept and love your body more? Are there any movement? I don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's so cheesy, and I know everyone groans when I say this, but affirmations. Because it's the same idea as gratitude work, when you're reinforcing this idea in your brain that you're thankful for the things that you have, or you're thankful for your body and what it can do for you. So affirmations are really, really powerful. I wrote a blog about this actually, about how to use affirmations when you're working out. So sometimes I'll also cue in class, like each time you stand, like feel really powerful in that stance, feel like the chest opening, your heart opening, in a proud posture. This is a proud position. You're proud of your body. You guys both just sat up. I love it. Exactly. But there's, you know, depression, go on a little tangent here. Depression, there are visual physical signs of depression, and it's that like fetal posture. It's like that protective, it's the feeling heaviness. It's, I've suffered from depression. It is as much about your mental health as it is about a physical experience, the same thing as anxiety. So when you think about what the opposite of a depression posture looks like, it's standing tall in that, like, I don't know, you probably heard that TED talk from a million years ago about power posing.
Yeah.
Like it's nice open collarbones. Yeah. Spreading your arms up wide, taking up space. Movement allows you to take up space. And there's a really great book that I think you guys would love called The Joy of Movement. That opened up my mind to a lot about this as well. And she talks in that book about how moving in sync with other people, you know, when you take a group fitness class, and unfortunately we're not able to do that in real life right now, but the act of breathing and moving in sync with other people builds community. And the mirror neurons in your brain actually like get confused by seeing a big group of seeing people moving together and think that you're taking up more space because you're doing the same movement. So you really are allowing yourself to be bigger, to be more seen. So there is like a science-y thing to it that's really cool.
That's so interesting. That might be why Avi loves group workout classes. Mm-hmm.
That's why and I like love SoulCycle.
Yeah, SoulCycle is a perfect example of you're doing choreography together to the beat of music. Music is a whole other layer of like sports psychology. So it's
Yeah, I loved the music. I loved the dancing, even though I didn't even really care. Like I wasn't really doing a real push-up. I just liked being on beat with all the other people. Like when you do a dance class, it's so fun when everybody kind of gets it. There's like a high at the end of it. So yeah, I could really see that.
I was never on BE. That's okay. Why I dance alone.
That's funny. Sammy, there's so many funny phrases that I could apply. Dance to your own drum or whatever. Yeah. I don't know any idioms, but
wasn't there like a poem called like a different drummer? Like that's me in the corner on my next to my mirror.
Let's do some non-scale wins. I'll read a Diastere non-scale win first. Okay. Hi, I love you guys, and I have a non-scale win to share. I have fluctuated my entire life to the point where I don't really know what I look like. Really, really.
Same. What do I look like?
When I get dressed to go out, I usually like what I'm wearing initially, but I'll take one last look at myself a minute before I leave and feel like I look terrible, fat, and I'm stupid for ever letting myself wear insert shirt, jeans, shoe, etc. I'll change into my tried and true outfit moments before leaving my apartment, and I'm annoyed with myself that I wear the same outfit all the time. I have now made a rule for myself that I am not allowed to give myself a final look because I know it will always lead to me feeling bad and making myself change. My new rule is that I liked it initially, the outfit is cute. I went out tonight in a shirt I've owned for months but have not allowed myself to wear because I don't feel 100% perfect in it, but it's been sitting in the back of my closet. I'm so proud of myself, and I even got a few compliments on my style for the night. Thank you guys for making it clear to me that confidence and style go hand in hand. I feel that.
Wait, yeah. Have you experienced, I know what she's talking about. It's like you put on the outfit and then there's like, and then all of a sudden it transforms like yeah. before your eyes into like a horrible outfit. And it's yeah. almost like, you know, when like it sort of reminds me of like when you take a selfie on your phone and like right before you take the selfie, you look good. And then in the selfie, you look bad. It's like this weird psychological transformation that kind of happens like at your second look at yourself.
Totally.
It's and like first it's good. And then like a few minutes later, it's like, ooh.
Or when you're out and you see a photo and you're like, what the fuck? This is what I look like. Oh my God. I wish I could go back and change. Like that happened to me recently. And I loved my outfit in the mirror. I even checked like two different mirrors and I was like, oh, do I really look this good? It's like this lack of trust in yourself from the get-go. And then yeah. you're like, all right, I'm going to go out in it. I like it. And then you're like, I like it so much. Take a picture of me. And then in the photo, it's not what it was like in the mirror. And then you're like, oh my God, like what do I was like, should I go back and change? Like, and it doesn't even matter. Like, first of all, I didn't go back to change, but it doesn't matter. And it's also this like feeling of being so loosely tied to something that's external, like these photos, how we were talking about last week about like photos are actually kind of toxic. These photos are what the mirror says. It's not like looking inward for that body, for that confidence.
So, I wonder if there were no photos, would there be diet culture? Like there wouldn't be able to be advertising for it. Like how would people feel about themselves?
Dating back to like another good book you should read is Fearing the Black Body by Sabrina Strings. It's like all about art history and dating back to the Renaissance and the objectification of women in art. It was still there even without the modern.
Oh, great. Thanks for letting us know.
Here's paint.
This is oh, right. The beginning of time.
Wait, that's so funny. Can you just make me look a little thinner with your brushstrokes? Oh my God. You're like, I can't believe you think I look like that.
Yeah, that's real.
That is like King Henry VIII in his the portrait like that we all see of him. He's had that redone, yeah. Yeah.
It's like he picks a wife based off of like an oil painting and he's like, she doesn't look like this.
That was Anne of Cleves. He did that. I'm a big English history nerd, but he did that with Anne of Cleves, basically. He didn't like the way she looked she didn't look like what she looked like in her painting and he divorced her.
Yeah, that's like definitely
the
wedding, real.
That's like the dating. Like on dating. Wait, so Aileen, what's your non-scale one?
My non-scale one. I'm struggling with one, honestly. This week has been a little bit rough in terms of just being like a little bit down. I don't know. I'm feeling the effects of just like being home. Like, I don't know. I've just been waking up with headaches. Maybe my non-scale win is just kind of not really judging myself for feeling like shit. So not being like, oh, you need to immediately feel better. like sort of just allowing myself to kind of feel it, which is new.
Because I have a win for you.
Oh, what's my win, Sammy?
We were like, I thought we were being like super vulnerable about our like, you know, feelings. That's a win.
When? Yesterday?
And the day before we were like talking about like our shit.
Our shit? I guess so. Yeah. That's what I mean is just because I'm allowing myself to feel it, I'm open to talking about it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Instead of the norm, which is shutting it down, being in denial and trying to do everything in my power to not feel like down.
Well, I think the win is that like maybe in the past in those conversations, it would have just come across as like a shallow complaint of like, I feel like shit.
Yeah.
And then it would have been like, ugh, same, me too. But there wouldn't have been any sort of like, it would just be that. Like,
yeah.
That would have been as far as we went. But
yeah, I think my win also goes to like, I don't feel like I've been really intuitive in my eating in this last week at all. I've just sort of been eating to cope. And
there's like a lot to eating, cope with.
Yeah, but I've been eating to cope. And I think maybe the win is that I recognized it and I'm not really judging myself for it. I'm just like, yeah, this makes sense.
Which is huge. And that's that's a big thing, actually. I say this with my private clients too, to like really make sure you're taking the time to, I love that you do this in the podcast, to congratulate yourself on those little moments in real time, because that turns into motivation to continue doing it. Or continue working out, you know, when you're feeling like, how could I possibly have the motivation to keep doing it like this?
Yeah. Helen, what's your win?
For me, I think, you know, like I said, it's just because I teach clients, this doesn't mean that I don't struggle with it myself. And so for me, I've been, the last few period cycles, I've been trying to adjust my workouts to where I am in my cycle. And often I'll still find myself being like, no, like I want to go for it. Also, because I've had a lot of stress in 2020 I've been more inclined to do like a HIIT workout. But I really paid attention this week and I just stuck with Pilates and like myofascial release work. And my body feels amazing. I have to say, I'm super grateful for walking my walk.
That's great.
What is myofascial release work? Can you just...
So it's like foam rolling or using like a massage ball. Getting
myo is muscle, right?
The fascia roll, the fascia, that thing,
To roll, right. Cool, nice, congrats. I know it's always it's hard to be like intuitive now. It's just feel very. We were just saying last episode. It's just I feel very dissociated for myself, for just the world, the computer, everything. Sammy, what is your win?
Okay. So this is like an interesting win in my attempts to outsmart myself, to actually eat intuitively and like be mindful. And yeah. So for the debate, I was like feeling really anxious. That shit didn't start till like 9:30 and it was like horrible, obviously. But like right before I'd eaten dinner, I'd eaten dessert, but I was like, okay, I feel like I'm going to need pizza for this. Like, I'm not actually hungry, but like, I just feel like I need to have like a bite, or I need to have it like, just in case, you know, just in case, like emergency.
Reserves.
So, but I went back and forth. I was like, am I really going to order basically a second dinner right now? When I just had dinner, and I was like, okay, but I really feel like I feel a need for it. Like, and I was just like, okay, I'm just going to get it. And I had it, and literally I had like one. Normally the reason I was like afraid to get it is because I can't like have a pizza in my house without eating like at least 3 or 4 slices, like minimum. And then I have to, and it's even once I'm full, but I only had like
clean
one.
Plate club.
Yeah. Clean plate club. But like the other night I only had like 1.5 slices and I just like stopped when I was done. But I felt that there was something to having it there as like a security blanket to like know that I could. It wasn't like I just said to myself like, no, you're not ordering it. I like allowed myself to like go there to do something like extreme, and which is to order a second dinner. And yeah. And it honestly, like it made me feel like less obsessed with it because it was like there.
Yeah.
And then I had it for breakfast the next morning.
Yeah, like intuitive or at least even said, like, as long as because the intuitive eating is a privilege because it's based on the fact that you have access to the food. And the whole point is that you should fill your fridge, and you're privileged to do so, fill your pantry so that you have access to those things. So you know that they're there, because otherwise it's just this, like, I have nothing in my house. I'm restrictive. I just want to order everything.
Right. So, like, that's the fear fact of that deprivation. I was like, fear, right, yeah, the fact that I didn't have to think through, like, also the financial implication of, like, ordering an extra pizza for not really any good reason is, like, obviously a privilege that, like, didn't play, you know, that didn't play into, like, whether or not I could have it. So yes, that is, like, definitely a privilege.
But yeah,
and that is something that, like, if I did have to also think about, like, you know, do I maybe not want to, like, spend this money, that would have played into, like, maybe a feeling of deprivation also.
Right. Pizza's good, though. I had a really delicious pizza this week, actually.
You needed all the support you could get for that debate, so I'm all for
it. Yeah, that's also part of it. I forgot that was even this week. It feels like last week, but it was two nights ago.
It was 2 nights ago.
Oh boy. But so thank you so much, Helen, for joining us today. Where can people try your where can people follow you? Where can they download your app? What's on your app? Tell us everything.
Absolutely. So my Instagram is Helen V. Phelan. And no one can, it's Phelan, since Phelan is a tricky phonetic sound. And my app, you can find through my Instagram, you can find my website, and you can find the web version of the studio there, or the app is in the Apple Store and the Google Play Store as well. It's just Helen Phelan Studio. Very original, I know. So there's a discount code, so you can join Helen Phelan Studio, and that's just Diet Starts Tomorrow. And there's a 10-day free trial for everybody, but that code will get you 50% off your first month too. So would love to see you over there. But on the app, it's primarily Pilates, because that is, you know, my modality of choice. But I also, each week I do a full length Pilates workout, a quick cardio workout for, you know, times when you feel like you just need to sweat, you just need to blow off some steam, you need to stomp around a bit. And then I also live stream once a week on the app, and I do a live Zoom class on Wednesday nights as well. So you can really choose the workouts intuitively. It's set up so that you can filter by class length, by equipment, by intention, meaning, like, do you want to feel energized, balanced, stronger, so that it's reinforcing this idea that you are choosing a feeling for your body than choosing a look for your body. All of the workouts can be done with just body weight as well, just because I know I offer props to get a little bit more out of it. But I also know that a lot of us were not anticipating having to set up home gyms this year. So it's important that you're able to still get that feel good benefit of moving even without all the fancy equipment.
I love that you call weight equipment props, because that's, like, really, really funny. It's like a theater.
Oh my gosh, that is so much.
I didn't even think of that. But yeah,
I love that you said that, because maybe if I can, like, sort of redefine the whole thing for myself, like, maybe
it's a show.
Right. I'm putting on a performance.
Well, before we get, I also
and,
something that's
and
been
my
really good.
Those are my costumes.
Exactly. Yeah. But this just came into my head that something really nice about working out at home this year has been no mirrors. Like, I have a full length mirror in my bedroom, but it's not set up, you know, in the living room space where I'm working out and filming. And I mean, there's this whole other aspect of me seeing the videos that I'm uploading, and that's tough for me to watch, but I'm not staring at myself in a mirror. And I've been staring at myself in a mirror in spandex since I was 3 years old. So it is really nice engage in movement without, you know, picking apart. It's a great tool for alignment and making sure that you're doing the move correctly, but it also hinders your ability to feel where your body is in space and trust your body. So
that's a very interesting point.
I was just about to say, that's so interesting, because, like, again, like, that whole external versus internal, you look to the mirror to see if you're doing it right versus looking kind of, I mean, it sometimes helps to see if, like, you're in a full actual plank, but if you think about what you need to do to be in a plank, like hips in, you know, that whole thing, then you could kind of look inward. That's interesting. How does that feel? Also, do you feel like something's missing?
I think in the beginning I was more like, well, like I'm not going to know what I'm doing. And granted, I do have a pretty good sense of body awareness just because this is mm-hmm. what I do all day, but it's habitual. And I do feel like it's been really nice for, I'm sure there are parts also, I have no trainer looking after me anytime mm-hmm. you're working at home. Your alignment may not be as good as if you're on a private one-on-one session, but that's not feasible for a lot of people. But the better you get at self-correcting and the better you get at feeling where your body is in space, the less that is going to be an issue.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. I'll think about that more.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And everybody go follow Helen, follow at Diet Starts Tomorrow, follow Aileen at Aileen, Sammy at Sammy, email us dst@betches.com. Go buy our stuff on shopbetches.com/collection/DST and go rate, review, subscribe. And we're always with you
through thick and thin.
Diet Starts Tomorrow is hosted by Aileen Cooperman
and Sammy Fishbein.
Our editor is Sean Kilby. Our podcast producers are Mike Coscarelli, Sean Kilby, and Carly Rice.
And artwork is by Brittany Levine. Be sure to follow us at Diet Starts Tomorrow on Instagram and email your questions and non-scale wins to dst@betches.com.
Thank you to our partner, Impossible Foods. Some people say we would be better off if we ate less meat, which is why Impossible Foods made delicious and nutrient-packed meat from plants. So you can eat more meat, like home-style meatballs, hot dogs, chicken nuggets, and so much more, all made from plants. Impossible creates delicious meat from plants that's better for the planet, so everyone can eat more of it. Check out ImpossibleFoods.com to see how you can help solve the meat problem with more meat. That's ImpossibleFoods.com.
Betches.